A bit earlier than usual, but none the worse for it. It's the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp. Don't forget, you'll find him on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. And you can listen to his podcast. You can subscribe for free, gadgetdetective.com, or pick them up on any of the ways, pretty much, that you normally listen to a podcast. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Good to have you with us. We hear a lot, don't we, about the older generation who are sort of cut off from the modern world because they don't get all this tinternet nonsense, you know, and complaining about bank branches closing because there's no other way I can do my banking, for example. Well, they might want to hear about the first man you're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so I had as with every week, I have a choice of news stories, and you know, it's often, you know, Elon Musk. All right, I'll give you all the stuff I should have covered today. All right? Elon Musk has appointed a CEO who is not his dog, which is arguably progress, although it remains to be seen how much control she really will have. Mm-hmm. But an interesting appointment all the same. And AI is going to kill us all. More experts come out and tell us that, including the godfather of AI, who's been working at Google and on AI for about 5 decades,
right,
has just resigned at Google in order to be able to tell us all that we're doomed. So on those happy notes, I move on to something more positive, which is a 100-year-old man is learning to use new technology as part of a digital literacy scheme. This gentleman's based, he's literally 100 years old, he's based in Doncaster, and as part of a digital literacy scheme, which is running, these sorts of schemes are running libraries all over mm-hmm. the country, so people really should, you know, take advantage of it. And you don't have to be old, you just you know, need to want to learn and be less disconnected from the rest of the world in terms of, you know, the technology. So he's been given a tablet. His chap's name is Bernard Golding. He's a World War II veteran. He's looked up his assignments and postings during the Second World War, which must be kind of special for him, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's also taken a selfie of himself. And I'm minded. I mean, there's lots of reason I do technology journalism. I hesitate to call it journalism, but for want of a better term. But the most gratifying thing that I do is if I can help people who maybe are a little bit shy and coming forward. I often do tech phone-ins, and you know, you get people coming forward who are, you know, as technically as aware as I am, essentially, who've been trying to solve the same problem for maybe 2 weeks, and it's a very vertical problem, and you know, it's of interest to nobody else really but them and me. But then you get people who are really hesitant to come on and say, oh, it's a silly question, it's a dumb question.
Yeah,
And actually, first of all, it's not a silly question, because the questions that often appear to be simplest, you know, are not necessarily simple in their essence. But also that the answer to that question hopefully is of more help to everybody. And I was thinking back to when I was a teenager, and I had my first computer. It was a BBC Micro.
Oh, yes.
32K of RAM and a cassette tape interface. So if you missed a bit of data, you'd hit rewind and play again to get the blocks of data that you'd miss. And I was so stricken with this thing, and it was amazing. And I was in the same boat as everyone else. No one had had a computer before. It wasn't like this was a faster computer than last year's model. It was something completely new that we just didn't have access to. And it was my first computer that I owned. And I was so smitten with it, I walked into my local library and I did a deal with them where every Saturday afternoon I would turn up, set up my BBC Micro, a big chunky monitor, a cassette deck, and goodness knows what else, and we'd set it up and we'd show people computers, because there was literally a lot of misunderstanding and you know, fear about what they were, and taught people to program in BASIC and various other languages, and just it was, and the I think that's what instilled in me the joy of doing what I do now, which was that realization in people's faces. You could just see it when literally the penny drops, and they realize that it's not as hard as they thought, and it was actually nothing really to be worried about, notwithstanding the fact it's now going to kill us all. But up until this point, there's been nothing at all to worry about. And I just love the idea of this 100-year-old guy, and I just take him to be an exemplar for all of us, that if we feel challenged by anything, that, you know, not to fear it, plunge ahead and have a go with it.
It's so true. I was going to say, the library scheme, I'm glad you touched on that, because as it happens, my husband, Ramel, teaches IT for a living. And he is one of the volunteers who regularly, on a Saturday morning, goes to our local library. And he has got any number of people. They tend to be old, but as you say, they're not necessarily old. There could be all kinds of reasons why they've not learned this stuff already. And he gets them started, and they come back a few weeks later, and they've managed all those things. And now they want to know how to do another thing, because is it right that you can also do this? Oh, yes, it is. Let me show you that one. And it is so rewarding for both parties. So you're quite right. It's never too late. And I just wish that the doubting Thomases out there, the people who willfully won't have anything to do with it, could, for the scales to fall from their eyes, they would get so much from it. And it's very frustrating, isn't it?
And it is understandable. I mean,
it's also very understandable. Yes,
I've had members of my own family, older members of my own family, who very bright people, very very clever people, but just won't touch it. Wouldn't touch a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it didn't help that I was there to do it for them if they needed to. So I started wearing a T-shirt saying, "No, I will not fix your computer," and I still wear it from time to time. But look, this chap is an example to us all, and not just about tech. The fact that, you know, he's got an open enough mind at 100. And by the way, I have to say, this guy doesn't look that much older than me, which is a little bit depressing, but he looks very good for his age.
But there again, you look terrible for yours, so I suppose that's
well,
how that works.
I do. We've
really.
Got a, we've got yeah, about yeah. the same amount of hair. So... The good news is I'm unlikely to lose much more in the coming decades, but there we are. So look, I just wanted to share that with you, notwithstanding, you know, the end of the world.
It was nice to have a week off from the gloom. It really was, On to your gadgets then, starting with the Google Pixel 7a.
Right, so Google make the Android operating system, which is in almost every smartphone other than Apple smartphones in the world. For the most part, they give the Android operating system to the likes of Samsung, and they put it in their hardware. But Google make their own range of hardware, and their phones are called the Google Pixel phones. The latest phones up until Wednesday that were around were the Google Pixel 7 and the 7 Pro. And, you know, the 7 was about £600 and the Pro more than that. They then launch a while later the A series, which is in this case the Google Pixel 7a. That was launched on Wednesday. I've had it for about a week before that, but it's been under embargo, but I've had a play with it. And it's quite a remarkable phone because it's got very, very close to the specs of the 7. But it's £150 cheaper. So this one, the full price for it, retail price is £449, which is not cheap. But I have to, I mean, I'll give you the sort of the takeaway from this, leaving aside all the detail. I think this is arguably the best smartphone that you can get for £449.
Wow, that's from you, that's quite something.
Yeah. It's quite incredible. So first of all, choice of colours, charcoal, snow, sea or coral. The coral is gorgeous, I have to say. If you look at the coral, it's just...
Is charcoal black and snow white by any chance?
Yeah, essentially. Fancy. Well, charcoal is more dark grey and the snow is sort of slightly off white. I'm someone who actually mocks people who buy things because of their colour. But I have to say, I was deeply saddened that I didn't send me the coral one to test because it's beautiful. Anyway, colours aside, the specs are quite amazing on this. So I said, they're within a sliver of the 7, and yet most people won't really notice the difference. So the screen is 6.1 inches instead of 6.3. Processors a little bit faster on the, those sorts of... You'd see it in the specs, but you wouldn't necessarily notice it day to day. So it's a 6.1-inch OLED screen. OLED means... It uses a technology which is very vibrant. The blacks are truly black, and the colours really pop. So, it's an amazing thing. Google now using... and the screen is 70 hertz refresh rate. Even an iPhone 14, a standard iPhone 14, which is goodly more expensive than this, has got a 60 hertz refresh rate. Hertz is the number of times a second it refreshes. When you have a 90 hertz refresh rate, it means that when you scroll, everything is more smooth. It gives a much more satisfying experience. They use their own chip in this, and instead of using a third party, they use something called the Tensor G2 chip, which is a remarkable chip and particularly good for the AI that they built into their phone. And there's lots of good stuff that go on. I mean, that's the other half of the story with Google's phones, is that there's some amazing things that you can do on the photography front with the AI. You know, this thing called computational photography. So the pictures that your camera phone takes now isn't just the light that comes through the lens and lands on the sensor as it has been up until recently. It takes every pixel, every dot of that picture, and it optimizes it. So, for example, sometimes you take a picture, and in order to get the face exposed, the background is all blown out and bright white, or you know, because the background's bright, you're in shadow, even though you're the main subject of the photo. This can optimize the exposure for every dot in the picture. If you have a relationship, not you, if one has a relationship that doesn't go well, and
yes,
you can actually remove the person from the photo, and it will use AI to work out what it was likely to be behind it, and it doesn't make it look like they've been cut out of the picture. There's all sorts
although of
things.
Course you might want it to look like they've been cut out of the picture.
Well, that option's still open to you, and you can still hit their phone with a hammer as well. That all right. Works.
Still allowed.
You cut up the clothing and hit the phone with the hammer. I don't, you know, that's the modern equivalent, right? Is harming people's digital life. It used to be cutting up their clothing.
Yeah. We shouldn't. Now, I mean, there's terrible things you hear about, so we really shouldn't be laughing about
it. You shouldn't laugh at it. It's not good, and I don't.
Sorry, guys.
I don't suggest that anyone does it to me. So 8 gigabytes of RAM, which again is a shed load of RAM, more than you'll get in the average iPhone. Very snappy, very good in quality. The camera, the main camera, is 64 megapixels, which is the first time you've seen a camera of that resolution on one of their A series models. And it's great because you can get 64 megapixels, but when you want to zoom in, you can just crop the pixels in the middle, still have a good number of pixels to make up your picture and no loss of quality. Because before, digital zoom meant you just blew up the picture, all the dots became bigger dots and it became chunky on closer examination. But this thing will do great. It's 30 megapixel on the rear facing camera, 8 megapixel on the front. What does this mean? It means it's great. The battery is good. They're quoting 24 hours of use from the battery, up to 72 if you put it on extreme battery saver mode. In practice, you'll get a little bit less than those figures, but still you get a good amount of RAM. It's 18 watt fast charging and 7.5 watts wireless charging on it. The whole thing is great, and it looks great. It's got this bar across the back. You know how the cameras on the back of phones tend to look a bit ugly these days?
Yes.
What Google do, they put this black bar against it. If you ever watch Star Trek The Next Generation, Geordi LaForge's visor, it's like that. It's like this black visor that goes right across the width of the phone. It's just, look it up later.
That'll be useful to some people listening, yes,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's basically this black stripe that goes across it. So instead of having this all these sort of knobbly round circles on the back, you've got this very sleek black stripe. The thing is a tour de force. For the money, as I say, the specs are fantastic. It's bang up to date. The money's great, and it's $449. And if you wait a bit, you'll probably see people discounting. It's literally only just out. Right. But if I was going for an Android phone and that was my budget, this is what I would buy.
Let us whiz on. We've got about 3.5 minutes left, just to let you know, to the Logitech MX Keys Mini.
Yeah, so it's Logitech MX Keys Mini. So Logitech have carved out a niche for themselves of making peripherals for computers and tablets, amongst other things. But the quality of them is the best in the industry, I think, and better than what you get with Apple. So when, you know, I've bought Apple Macs and replaced the keyboards with Logitech ones. And this thing is a wireless keyboard. It's called the MX Keys Mini, and it's mini because it has no number pad on the right of it. It's just a very small, compact wireless keyboard, very high quality keys, backlit keys. And one of the great features of the backlit keys is as it detects your hand, so as you reach for the keyboard, if it's dark in the room, the ambient light sensor can work out, then the keys light up as you reach for the keyboard, which is brilliant.
Yeah,
because also
very cool,
being wireless and is having a sort of rechargeable battery also helps the battery life. Comes in a range of colours. I recommend the graphite to you, not just for aesthetic reasons. I found that with the white keyboard, when the keys are backlit, they're not easy to see. But when you have when you have black keys and you have the backlit, because it shines a light through the shape of the character on the key top.
Seems a fairly fundamental thing to have got slightly wrong, don't you think?
Maybe other people would have a better experience. Maybe, you know, but I found that the black or the charcoal just offers much better experience. The other nice thing about this is that it'll control up to three devices, so it's compatible with an Apple Mac, a Windows PC, iOS, so your iPhone or your iPad, or even if you're so inclined, Linux or Android. So you can set it up to work with three machines, and you just hit a button, and it suddenly, and you can get a mouse that does the same thing. So instead of having a keyboard and mouse for different machines, you can use it. So you can just put your tablet, let's say you've got an iPad, you can put it on the stand and just use it beautifully, wirelessly, using this keyboard. I mean, quite incredible. And the other thing is, if you've got two machines set up at the same time, using their software, you can actually drag and drop across. So you can take something from, say, your PC and drag it literally across onto the screen of your Mac and vice versa.
Have to hurry, you caller.
I have to go for the call. Shade under £100, 4.5 stars out of 5 for the form factor, and there are bigger form factors that they also do, but it is the best wireless keyboard that I've seen, and certainly better than anything that I've seen from Apple.
Love you big time. Talk to you in 7.